that ability to be journalistically sound, get your facts right, deliver all that, but add a bit of personality to it as well.
Hey everyone, I'm Katie Trexton and you are listening to Anatomy of an Agency, the podcast that lifts the lid on everything that goes on behind the scenes of the talent industry. In this episode, we are joined by Ron Chakraborty. As BBC Sport's head of major events, Ron is across every aspect of some of the biggest TV sport productions in the world, including overseeing the BBC's BAFTA-winning coverage of the Paris Olympic Games in 2024. I started by asking him how he and his team go about selecting their on-air talent.
It's an interesting process. I think in a lot of cases, and certainly the area I look after, the rights deals we've got are ongoing, so inevitably there's a bit of continuity. You know, you're using the same people as last time out, so you'll get someone like a Sue Barker present Wimbledon for a long time, and you'll get John McEnroe present a long time, but you also still want to just keep that next generation coming through, so that when the time comes to move on for a presenter or someone retires, you've got the replacement there. So when, say, Sue retired, we've got Claire Balding, it was like national treasure for national treasure, nice and easy. But every so often, you'll obviously, the BBC will get rights to something they used to have, or something new, whatever it might be. So I remember, 15 years ago, we got the Formula One back, and then about 5 years ago, we got cricket on TV back, and then the Champions League highlights came back. So new things, a little bit of a blank sheet of paper. But I'd say, I think what you're looking for is a mixture of probably existing BBC talent, I'd say, and then, but you also want to look at who's out there. If you take on a new sport, who are the voices people like, who's popular, who's respected, and get a mixture of that. And if you can get someone new, brilliant. So going back to all those examples, say the Formula One back in, 07, 08, so it was Jake Humphrey was presenting, David Coulthard was kind of the new face back then, Eddie Jordan, but then, you know, you had a bit of continuity as well. And then when we got the cricket, you promoted a little bit from within. You had Michael Vaughan and Phil Tufnell, who were big on the radio team. Well, they'll be great on TV as well, we'll move that up. And similarly, Champions League, we've got so many great football presenters. So it was a great kind of opportunity for the likes of Mark Chapman and Gabby Logan to present, but we also knew we wanted the pundits to be different from Match of the Day, so we brought in journalists rather than ex-players. So it's a real mishmash of trying to see what's out there, but we also like to have a kind of BBC feel, have existing faces, whether it be from sport or from other genres as well.
And how do people get into that BBC team? Is it that you literally graduate with your degree in journalism or from a newspaper and you start at the bottom and you stay for the next 45 years? Or are you waiting for someone else to rub off the, you know, rough edges?
Yeah.
And then they come over to you and you're their prestige role for the remainder of their career?
Dare I say, if I was to answer this question, dare I say someone from 25 years ago was to answer that question, there probably was a little bit of a kind of BBC, not closed shop, but because we had Grandstand, that was a crucial thing. You had a program, weekend program, Saturday, Sunday. Therefore, we had 50 weeks of presenting roles, commentary roles, reporting roles, all sorts of sport. You still have that in football because you've got football focus every week with, you know, a number of stories. You've got both Final Score and Five Lives after output on Saturday afternoon. So there's lots of opportunities there. But nowadays, because there's so many broadcasters, the landscape's so fragmented, you've got to look in other places as well. So yes, we'll have the existing talent. If I'm looking at Olympics, you know, the last few years, the first three names on the team sheet, Gabby Logan, Claire Balding, Hazel Irving, they're just brilliant, top of their game and so on. But then if you look at, say, Paris, we just had the morning show sent by JJ Chalmers and Jeanette Kwatshe, came from really different backgrounds. So Jeanette retired as an athlete and then just did the hard yards, Sky as a reporter, did a bit of Channel 5 news, and then we gradually spotted, look, Jeanette's good. So we started using her on the athletics team as a reporter. We knew she wanted to become a presenter, and we just gradually increased those opportunities. Similarly, JJ made his debut on the Invictus Games. We knew he was a sports fan, and we developed him over a number of games. He was doing the overnight on the Commonwealth Games in 2018 in Tokyo. And then suddenly we put on the afternoon, so it was recorded sport. Bigger audience, but not as challenging. And then by the time we did the highlights in Birmingham, he's ready to do live. So they were two individuals that made our Olympics team. We came from very different backgrounds. They weren't sort of, as you say, straight out of university, your BBC through and through. They came from very different areas.
And what about, because you just mentioned Jeanette, and obviously she went from being an athlete to being a presenter, but what about the athletes who become pundits? Is that something where they finish their career and then you just snap them up based on their profile and experience, their their success as an athlete? Or is that something where they also need to be accruing hours on air while they're competing?
It's really interesting because I think there's I wouldn't want to say there's different levels of athlete, but there's certain ones you see from their personalities when they're doing their interviews, they think they'll be a good pundit. And I think classic example would be our track cycling. You know, Chris Hoy retired. We knew we wanted Chris Hoy. He's got that wonderful sort of ambassadorial godfather of the sport, the absolute daddy, just classy guy. But then over the last few years, you saw Laura Kenny doing her interviews, this incredible bubbly personality. I thought, God, well, if she can bring that to the studio, you barely need to do any feedback or broadcast training. She's just got it. That's it. And sure enough, the two of them were brilliant in that. So they were obvious ones. And I think when you see people retiring at the classic, you know, the rowers, we picked up Steve Redgrave, then Matt Pinson, then Catherine Granger. They were the biggest names. They had great personalities, hugely articulate. So you put, and then you look at all the individual sports, and we are picking up, you know, Jess Ennis and so on. But it's fascinating that obviously just after 2012, then Discovery Eurosport came in, and thankfully, due to the sort of Team GB machine, there's enough for everyone. So we'd have Jess Ennis, they'd have Greg Rutherford, you know, we'd have Chris Hoy, they had Bradley Wiggins. So it was enough to go around. Every so often there's a little bit of a tug of war because it's like one absolute name.
Yeah, how often did you get your first choice?
Well, there was one that was brilliant where I think both us and Discovery, like two guys courting the same woman, we were both trying to get Eve Muirhead as the sort of face of curling to be part of our team for next year's Winter Olympics, and she spurned us both and became the chef de mission of Team GB. So she's another one that was just a huge personality in the sport, achieved everything, probably the most recognisable face of curling for the last 20 years, so she's the obvious person we wanted. But I know she's just got huge ambition. She's the most amazingly sort of multi-talented person, great golfer, as everyone knows, plays the bagpipes, and obviously she wants to get into sports administration as well, so she's chosen that route despite our kind of the best of our charms to get her on board. But hopefully, look, she'll be bouncing around the Winter Olympics. We'll get her on board at some point anyway. But that was one where, we hoped to get her and didn't. So it's not perfect. But I feel we're a lot luckier with the Olympics. Our colleagues in football, you know, we'll have our usual names, and sort of Alan Shearer and so on. But when it gets to a major tournament, that's when the bidding wars start. We all want, you know, the big international names, and ITV are going to pay this and you're going to pay that, and you know the likes of, you know, Mourinho are going to be out of both our budgets now. But I think that's one where it gets really competitive. We're in a little bit of an easier world with both the Olympics and with Wimbledon as well. We get a really good team together there every year, and we're not quite as challenged when it comes to rivals trying to nick our best names.
But imagine if Eve had spurned you both to become a professional bagpipe player.
Oh, exactly. I'm sure she'd be very good at it. Definitely. There's nothing she takes on that she isn't really good at.
So one thing I am interested in, obviously, as we said, some of your career presenters have come up through journalism. They've maybe studied it, but they've definitely done the hard yards, probably in the industry. The athletes are less likely to have that history. Do you then expect them to have gone and got their own kind of training or experience, or do you offer them that training? They've got potential, we're going to polish them up.
Yeah, there's a bit of both. I think sometimes, you know, I'll be honest with you, if you're not as high profile a name, if it wasn't sort of, you know, a big gold medal moment, but you really want to do it, then I think you probably do have to find a little bit of experience yourself. And it might be with other broadcasting outlets, but it might be your own podcast, it might be your own YouTube channel. You might just post stuff on your Instagram saying, look, here's my analysis of whatever sport it might be. And that's what gets noticed. I think anytime, whether you're an agent or whether you're an individual, if you can send something to a broadcaster, look, this is what I do, that's great. And it might not be that you can find those opportunities with a broadcaster, but these days you can create them themselves. And we can see someone who might be a little bit raw, but we say, well, I'll tell you what, you know, they could do a little bit of television or radio for us, but they could also do a brilliant job, you know, producing social content, because that's clearly what they do. So we see that when we, you know, people can help themselves, great. But if there's someone we have picked and we think, okay, you might not be a natural person, or dare I say, they might come to us to say, look, I'd love to get some feedback and what I need to work on. We've got broadcast trainers who are really, really good, and they do people who are just making their first steps in broadcasting to the biggest names retiring from football to think, look, I need some feedback. And he treats everybody equally, and I've seen his feedback, and it's as blunt to the biggest sports name that it is to the sort of the newest name you haven't heard of. So we will give that feedback, whether it's presenter, pundit, or commentator.
When you're watching that content that's shared with you, or when you're meeting athletes for the first time, or even prospective presenters for the first time, what are those raw character traits that you're looking for that pique your interest beyond their CV?
I think it's the magic combination is that ability to be journalistically sound, get your facts right, deliver all that, but add a bit of personality to it as well. And that's why when I mentioned sort of Claire's and Gabby's and Hazel's and so on, they are at the peak of that. That when you're presenting live Olympics, multi-sport, you've got all these facts and figures, a million athletes, weird and wonderful rules and regulations you've got to bring. You do all of that, get it right so you're trusted, and you can bring personality and humour and warmth to it as well. I've seen some people manage a bit of both. They're absolutely great personalities, but they're getting all the facts wrong. But there's other people who get the facts right, but perhaps a little bit too straight and earnest. I think if you can get that magic combination, brilliant. But I think the key one is getting your facts right, because the moment you get your facts wrong, that's a reputational thing. Suddenly, well, that person got that name wrong, or that person didn't win it last year. So I think that's the first thing you're looking for. Someone who isn't thinking, right, I want to be on TV. So right, I'm going to get this right for you. I'm going to do the hard yards. And you see that with everyone. So look, this isn't just I'm going to walk in the studio and the first thing I want to do is get my Instagram shot. The first thing I do is make sure I'm prepared and I've got the script and I'm doing the job properly first. So I think you look for that level of the professionalism first, and then hopefully you can add all the personality and the fun with it on top of that.
How helpful is it if someone's trying to break into the industry or break into the BBC, not literally in a kind of criminal sense, for them to have an agent by their side? Or is that actually sometimes a hindrance?
Well, a good agent's always good. And there's obviously so many good agents. But I think it can help. I think it often helps. Dare I say, that is true what I'm saying, actually. The right agent can be really good, because I think what you don't want is someone who says, this person's brilliant, get them on. You know, oh, yeah, more appearances, more work, more. I think it's just knowing where they are in their career, what the right opportunity is for them. And if you've got that, hopefully it isn't the only thing you're trying to do. You're trying to find other opportunities as well. It's just that help to look for other opportunities, and look, you've got the connections, you can open doors for them. That could be the tough part from for any ex-athlete. Suddenly, you know, you've had these amazing highs, you know, all these things you've worked for years and years, and then suddenly you're on LinkedIn trying to link in with, you know, the head of this, the head of that. So this is really, you know, I'm out of my comfort zone here. So I think an agent can really help. Look, I know this world, and if you know the sports world as well, that can hugely help. I think that's probably an important thing for an agent, that everyone's not all the same. And if you just pick, whether they're an ex-athlete or an out-and-out broadcaster journalist, where they want to be, the sort of opportunities they should look for, but also the feedback afterwards to say, look, okay, how did that go? What do they need to work on? What can we do next? It isn't just, right, what's the next thing? More opportunities, more work, where can it be? So I think just that's where an athlete can help. Just a little bit of, actually, door opening, but that kind of reality of the sort of feedback, where you are and how you can develop, and that kind of dialogue you can have with broadcasters to make sure, you know, expectations are real, but also, you know, hopefully if we also know what they want to do, so we can look for those opportunities. And also that's one of the great things about the BBC, that it's not just sport. If people say, oh, I'd love to do a little bit of daytime, I'd love to do a bedtime story, I say, well, we can do that for you. And if we haven't got loads of sport opportunities, which can be the case with Olympic sports, we can find other things elsewhere that just keep the experience going, and hopefully keep the BBC connection as well.
It's really interesting what you say about understanding the industry. Also, in terms of the presenters and commentators, probably more than a pundit, how beneficial is it for them to understand how production works?
There's different levels. I'd say probably the peak of it would be football pundits, because, you know, top of the tree, you got your Gary Neville's. There's the famous story when he became the Sky Sports pundit, he had the touchscreen installed in his house over the summer, so he knew exactly how it worked. And I think when there's that kind of competition, you know, top class football analysis, you really need to know, how does this kit work?
That's interesting. So most important for the pundits?
Yeah, I think so, because I think that, certainly punditry wise, you need to know what the kit can do and how quickly you can do it. You don't want to be demanding, I need this. If you know, if you've just stood in the back of a truck and work out, right, this is how quickly it can take, this is what I can do, and this is what I can't do. That's that. I'd say as a presenter, yeah, definitely, it helps just spending a day in a gallery. If it, certainly earlier in your career, I mean, certainly you wouldn't, you know, those names I keep mentioning, they don't need to do that. But it's just little things like if a presenter, you know, has got a really quick link from a chat into something else, there'll be a director who's like, oh, slightly frustrated. Look, I need time to set up the shot, to animate the screen behind you. I need that link to be 10, 15 seconds. You need to see what I'm doing here and how you can help me. And I think that's the sort of two-way street, because ultimately, the presenter's the one out there. They're the one that if there's a mistake made, you know, behind the scenes, they're the one that the face of it. But at the same time, you can really be a help to the director by working out what they need to do, or the editor as well, and just make sure you deliver something that's hopefully what everyone's kind of collaborating together to deliver.
And if you're an athlete and you're in the middle of your career, but you intend, because this happens a lot, you go and get your gold medal at the Olympics, and if I get my gold medal, I'm going to retire. What do you do to make sure that rather than you then spending the 4 years after getting your gold medal learning your craft and someone else has come through, What do you do to prepare yourself so that you can hit the ground running the second you retire if you want to go into broadcasting?
I think there's a few that have done that. They've knocked on our door and said, right, I'd love to just trail to see how TV works and come watch a show. Sometimes it's just for a show. The craziest one, I'm just so impressed that Lizzie Arnold, having won the, I think it was after her second Olympic gold, she came and spent a week at BBC Sport, trailing TV output, website output, just to see how it all worked. She just wanted to see it and just get an idea of the sort of the background machine sort of thing. But I think at the very least, just coming in, sort of trailing a show if you can, and then just working out, oh, is this something for me? And usually it is quite exciting, but it's just different. I think, you know, it is tough with athletes and any sports person that you're a long time retired, and it is very difficult, almost impossible, to replace the buzz of that big football match, that big Olympic race. But broadcasting is a lovely buzz, and actually the next best thing you do is be, you know, trackside when that big gold medal happens, and right, I've got to deliver a really great bit of analysis now. So if you trail that and see that this is what you want, I think we've done that with people who, I mean, funnily enough, there's a guy who's a medalist from Tokyo and Paris. I know he's going to be competing in LA, but he still wants to come around now and see what he wants, you know, what can I trail and what can I do so I'm ready for 2029. So, yeah, he's the one that's sort of taken the initiative through his agent and said, look, you know, what can I see? So we'll probably nip over to some tennis tournament this year and see how it all works. So that's probably the best thing. Can't do it for everyone. We can't have, you know, try and do an important show with 20 ex-athletes behind us trailing. But there's lots of output, so I'm sure we can do that, you know, quite regularly.
How difficult, like honestly, how difficult is it for sports people to transition into being successful broadcasters as a career? Not just popping up for a tournament every now and again and generally earning their living elsewhere, but if they want to make it a career, What are the actual odds of success?
I think there's certain sports where the odds are bigger, and certainly football's king on that, because football, first of all, it's year-round. There's multiple broadcasters doing it, so you know that if for some reason, even if you can't get on the BBC, there's Sky, there's Prime, there's TNT, and if you can't do all that, well then go out to Singapore, work for Star, go to America, work for NBC. There's just loads of opportunities there, and you can get better and better. And
if you're all the less good broadcasters.
I wouldn't dare slate another. A lot of other good broadcasters do great things, but there's opportunities there, and you can definitely make a career out of it. Another sport, year-round, tennis, golf, all that, it's brilliant. But I'd say from the area I work in, Olympics, it's trickier. You know, athletics is probably the one we show the most, but someone like, you know, Jess Ennis, you'll do a lot of events with us, but it's not year round. Someone like Steve Cram, probably yes, because he'll do the Diamond League circuit, and that's 20 events, and he'll do cross countries, marathons, and so on. So he'll be all right. But I'd say if you're a studio guest, you probably need something else. And then you go down the other sports, gymnastics, swimming, track cycling, there just probably isn't enough broadcasting within those sports. Even if you bounce between BBC, TNT, who do a lot of Olympic sports output, you probably need something else, another string to your bow to keep it going. And dare I say, the BBC is that little bit of profile work that you've still got, that kind of resonance, reputation, profile, that the other work should hopefully come in as part of that.
My last question. I know you've got years and years of brilliant broadcasting in your run, but if there's anybody listening who's thinking, actually, I fancy Ron's job. How is it they get to be pulling the strings rather than being in front of the camera?
tell you what, I mean, that's a route that's changed massively. Well, my route is very difficult to do now because I started in newspapers, and obviously that is, sadly, I mean, thankfully there's still a lot of people around BBC Sport who talk about newspapers. There's almost a little code, and you go, what was your newspaper? Stoke Sentinel. What was your newspaper? You know, Manchester Evening News. Yeah, it's great. But now they've come from a different background. You know, people come from whether it's websites. Obviously, our new director of sport has come from The Athletic. He was on The Mail and other newspapers, but he's come from a website background. And others may come not even from a sport background, might be broadcasting from elsewhere. So there's no single route, but I think it's got to be via the media somewhere. You've got to make a success in one platform or another, but hopefully have a little bit of knowledge of the rest. But inevitably, you're going to start in a junior role. You're going to be producing stuff. I started off, you know, doing the edits for Match of the Day and doing the sort of simple analysis bits. Then you're doing, you know, the montages. Then you're editing a program. You're the voice in the presenter's ear. So you do all that. There's some that skip massively. They're just hugely ambitious, you know, incredibly focused, and they climb the ladder a lot quicker. I've just happily meandered and here I am, you know, 20 years later. But it is just having that passion and having that knowledge of how everything works, and hopefully, and this is the biggest challenge of the job, it's just keeping up with the broadcasting trends. I mean, it's just crazy to think that when I first started doing the Olympics, the only way you could watch it was BBC One and Five Live. You just took what the editor gave you in the show. There was no social media, barely an internet. And nowadays, the choice is yours. We had to make a plan for the Tokyo Olympics. What are we doing for the people who aren't watching this on TV? Just think, I'm not going to watch this live on TV. It's the wrong time of day. I'm just going to take it in on my phone. Yeah. And you've got to be ready to continually adjust whatever your strategy is to make sure you're getting whatever event you're covering in front of the most eyeballs. And it's completely different. And you've just got to try and move with the times as best you can, despite the fact that you're gathering the years yourself.
Ron is absolutely right. We can never be standing still. That's all we have time for today, but do get in touch via our email address, gvo@goodvibesonlytalent.com, or on social media @goodvibesonlytalent. That's all from me. I will speak to you next time on Anatomy of an Agency.